passenger train by the name of 400 Twin Cities made its last trip through Eau Claire on July 23, 1963. The train then made its way to St. Paul, terminating in Minneapolis. If local advocacy groups are successful, a people-moving train will connect Eau Claire to the Twin Cities once again. Commuters from western Wisconsin might also be shuttled to an existing railway that passes through Chicago, Milwaukee, La Crosse, and the Twin Cities. Today on the West Side, we'll discuss passenger railway plans that will connect western Wisconsinites to the Twin Cities once again, and ponder the impact trains would make on commerce in our communities. Good morning, I'm Claire Neipert. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll be talking about plans for passenger railways in our areas of the state with passenger rail advocates Scott Rogers and Mark Quam, and Arun Rao, passenger rail implementation manager at Wisconsin's Department of Transportation. But first, let's give our topic some historical context. In 2019, WPR reporters Bridget Bowden and Sean Johnson produced a podcast called Derailed. It's about Wisconsin's high-speed rail line that never was. They look at how the project came together, how it fell apart, and what it says about how Wisconsin has changed.
In early 2010, the Madison to Milwaukee high-speed rail line was on the cusp of happening. Funding was secured, contracts were signed, construction was about to begin.
But if you remember anything about the debate over this project, you know that it was Scott Walker who wanted to derail it.
Because Scott Walker talked about this train all the time.
He talked about it in debates.
The bottom line is, I would much rather send that money back to Washington than be stuck with money that we can't afford, with a system we can't afford and don't want in the state.
In TV ads.
I'm Scott Walker, and if I'm elected as your next governor, we'll stop this train.
And in stump speeches.
Now more than ever, we need a leader who's going to tell the federal government that we don't want an $810 million train that we don't need and can't afford.
But even if you remember who wanted to stop this project, there's a chance you don't know who started it.
It wasn't Walker's Democratic opponent in 2010, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett.
You could argue it was the governor before Walker, Democrat Jim Doyle. But Doyle was only in that position because the state of Wisconsin got federal stimulus funding from President Barack Obama.
I'm announcing my administration's efforts to transform travel in America with an historic investment in high-speed rail.
Obama picked the Madison to Milwaukee rail line over projects in other states, partly because Wisconsin had been getting ready for this moment for years.
And that all started in the 90s under a different Wisconsin governor, a Republican, Governor Tommy Thompson.
So all aboard on Wisconsin to the transportation system of the future.
That was from the opening segment of Derailed, which was a limited-run podcast by WPR reporters Sean Johnson and Bridget Bowden. You can listen to more of that, Derailed, at wpr.org/derailed. Today on the West Side, we're talking about passenger rail today in our corner of the state. We now welcome three guests to the show. Scott Rogers is the chair of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition and vice president of governmental affairs on the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. Good to have you on, Scott.
Thanks for having us, Calera.
And welcome, Mark Quam. Mark is the president of the Chippewa Valley Transit Alliance, secretary and acting treasurer of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition, and also the representative for Wisconsin in the Rail Passengers Association. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Clara. Glad to be here today.
And hello, Arun Rao. Arun is the Passenger Rail Implementation Manager at the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. Welcome, Arun.
Thanks very much, Clara. Great to be here.
We're going to be using a lot of train words today, so I wanted to start by offering some definitions. People use several terms to refer to rail travel. Mark Quam, we often hear the terms high-speed rail and conventional rail. What's the difference between those two terms?
Well, for a lot of our listeners here today, I think it's important that people understand conventional rail is basically speeds up to 79 miles an hour, and sometimes conventional can go up to 90, but really, there's actually another step between conventional rail and high-speed rail, and it's what they call higher speed rail. Now, higher speed rail, you know, could be about 90 to 125, 130, but anything above that, then you would truly get into a high-speed rail. I think often sometimes the terms kind of get thrown around loosely. So I think what's important to understand is that, you know, conventional rail, which Amtrak currently runs on most routes at 79. That's probably the more, you know, traditional speed at this time. But as you know, we see improvements. We are seeing more improvements to some national Amtrak routes, which would bring speeds up to 110, which would potentially, you know, or even 120, which would move that into that next bracket of higher speed rail.
When we talk about these differences, why are they important when it comes to funding?
Well, I think from a funding perspective, obviously high-speed rail, true high-speed rail, you know, involves a lot more overhead costs with infrastructure and startup costs, whereas with conventional rail, often, you know, especially with Amtrak, we're already using pre-existing routes. So, I mean, obviously, you know, the funding is much, much different, you know, from a dollar standpoint. So it's obviously, you know, from a dollar standpoint, cheaper to put money into conventional rail versus high speed. But, you know, there's trade-offs either way. You know, if you make that investment, I think long-term high-speed rail is probably the way to go. But, you know, it may not be applicable to all areas. But, you know, there's certainly variables, but that's certainly one thing to consider.
And finally, Mark, when we talk about the Eau Claire to St. Paul railway today and the railway that connects Chicago to the Twin Cities, what kind of rail are we talking about?
Well, the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition's project to get daily service between Eau Claire and St. Paul Union Depot in St. Paul, that would be conventional rail, 79, maybe in some spots, maybe could be up to 90. But it would be conventional rail. Now, the proposed Twin Cities, Milwaukee, Chicago second daily train service, which would run on the existing Amtrak Empire Builder route, you know, going through La Crosse and Toma and to Milwaukee, the Dells, Portage, that would still be conventional speed, 79. Maybe at some point in the future when we get, you know, more development and we get more investment, you know, we could see those speeds go up. But for right now, we're looking at, you know, conventional 79, maybe a little bit more than that.
Thank you. According to the Bureau of Transportation Statistics, most Americans drive to work alone. And when Americans go on vacation, 9 out of 10, they take their personal vehicles. Except in metropolitan areas in the East Coast, railways fall behind air and bus travel in popularity. Scott Rogers, in this climate we built of independence while traveling, how do you see Wisconsinites responding to this resurgence of rail travel?
Well, I think we've found that people will respond if rail travel is provided. So one of the things that you have to consider in anything you look at statistics is rail travel even available. And then you have to narrow it down to where is it available? Is it convenient? Are the services often enough and are they competitive with driving or other modes of transportation? And one of the things we've actually seen, particularly more so in recent years, as just before we got into the pandemic, is we were seeing record numbers of people taking trains where they were indeed provided. And it's just like any other decision about transportation. You know, if we have choices available to people, certain types of transportation work for some individuals, depending on what their plans are, and other types will work in other situations. So if you're considering a trip somewhere, you may decide to fly from the Twin Cities or from Eau Claire, you may decide to drive. And what we found is that when passenger rail is provided, the public does respond to that. And it has a place in our transportation system. It also has the relevance that it can make stops between locations. So if you have a flight between Chicago and the Twin Cities, it's only going to serve Chicago and the Twin Cities. If you have a train and it stops in places like Eau Claire and Madison or La Crosse or other places, you're going to serve those intermediate markets as well.
Scott, do you see there being a typical rail passenger or do passengers kind of span all age groups and demographics?
I've traveled enough by train where it's available to see that it really does cover a lot of different kinds of groups. And Arun actually manages the passenger rail program, so he might even be able to tell us what he sees in those services. It depends a little bit about the type of train and so forth, but I think as we look to the future and how demographics are changing as well, There's really, we've seen as the baby boomers are aging, and that's a very large part of the population, they're still going to want to travel and may not always want to drive. And so providing an alternative to them. And then we've also found as younger people get their driver's license later, as they value time in a different way, because one of the attributes of train travel is that you don't have your hands glued to a steering wheel, or you're not spending a lot of time in a security line at the airport. You literally can relax and get some work done, or do some entertainment with your computer, watching a movie or playing a game, or just watching the scenery. And you really get that time back, and it's more productive. And we've seen a lot of interest among the younger generations in traveling by rail when it's provided.
Arun, what do you see in demographic trends when it comes to rail travel?
Yeah, I think, you know, as Scott said, it's really a wide range of demographics. Obviously, it varies by routes and type of routes. So in Wisconsin, we have the Amtrak Hiawatha service between Milwaukee and Chicago, which Wisconsin financially supports and we manage. And that route has seen, you know, I will say it's seen off the charts ridership growth prior to the pandemic, reaching 880,000 in annual riders in 2019. And those riders are, that route, you know, it tends to be heavier on the business traveler and commuting, maybe commuting once or twice a week or commuting daily traveler than some other longer distance routes might have. But even on that route, we see about 50 to 60% of the trip purposes being for personal travel, personal business, leisure and recreation. And on the Empire Builder as well, a pretty broad range of trip purposes and demographics we see in Wisconsin.
You just heard from Arun Rao, who's the Passenger Rail Implementation Manager at the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. We're talking about passenger rail in our corner of the state on the west side. Call 800-228-5615, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Now I want to turn to a caller. Hi, Mark Russ from Russ County.
Hey, what are you Mike, up to add? It's Mike, but that's okay.
Sorry about that.
I just wanted to tell a tale from my family's past, not as a way that we should go back to exactly how it worked back then, but rather to identify or to show how having a strong, consistent, reliable passenger rail service has the opportunity to open up kinds of things that you never probably even thought about from a commerce point of view. When my grandfather, when the winter winds blew, my grandfather used to go back to Chicago from the farm up north here to work a winter job. And the older boys stayed on the farm. And my dad and his brother would occasionally get telegraph messages from my grandfather to prepare a veal calf to send to various butcher shops in Chicago. And they were able to put on the evening train in the mail car and have that rode along with every passenger train and have that delivered to a shop in Chicago the very next morning. So that something was shipped in the evening could be hanging in the butcher shop on very next morning. And the idea behind that is that it's those kinds of compatible uses that we need to be thinking about when we think about rail, not just I'm competing with the airline, but what are the other things that we could be doing creatively to provide services, even the commute, the idea of people working remote and having to occasionally commute to a major city. Those are the kinds of ideas we need to be talking about and thinking about when we talk about whether it's high-speed rail or enhanced conventional rail, is what can we do creatively to create more commerce and different kinds of commerce than exist right at the moment.
Right. Oh, thank you so much, Mike. Scott, you're part of the Chamber of Commerce in the Eau Claire area. How do you want to respond to Mike's comment about how rail can also be used to improve commerce?
Well, Mike's suggestion is very insightful, and really that's the way to think about these things, is what opportunities does that open up? One of the things that we've been seeing in our area, as in some ways as a consequence of the pandemic, but it's already been happening, is we're seeing the nature of work changing. So that goes back to the thing we talked about in terms of using your time when you're on the train. But also we understand that our builders and realtors and people in our area are seeing a resurgence of people interested in moving to this area if they're able to do remote work, because they want the attributes of a smaller community, but also the amenities that a larger community has, which a place like Eau Claire has. Or if you think of Rusk County, which is a little bit more rural, somebody may want that kind of environment, but then be able to come to Eau Claire and get on a train. And if they work for a company in the Twin Cities and have to go once or twice a month or occasionally, which is some of the traffic that a run says we see on the Chicago to Milwaukee route, that really opens up a lot of possibilities. And you know, one of the questions that comes up is, will people still be commuting or traveling by train after the pandemic? And, you know, things are changing, but we actually saw a lot of forces of things showing that having access to passenger rail makes our region more attractive, and being able to get to larger locations. Our website, which is westwisconsinrail.org, actually has an article by Bill Draves from River Falls, who is a futurist, talking about why passenger train ridership is going to be even stronger after the pandemic, talking about changes in travel patterns and how people are responding to the current economy. And if anybody wants to read more about that, I'd encourage them to go there as well.
Our topic is passenger rail in our corner of the state. We're talking with two passenger rail advocates and a representative from Wisconsin's Department of Transportation. What's your stance on passenger rail in our corner of the state? You can join the conversation. Call 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. Or you can email ideas@wpr.org. I'm Claire Neipert. You're tuned to the West Side on the Ideas Network. Okay, back to our show today about passenger rail in our corner of the state. The Twin Cities Milwaukee and Chicago Inner City Passenger Rail Project is adding a second daily round trip passenger train on the 411 mile corridor between Chicago and the Twin Cities. Service will follow Amtrak's existing long distance Empire Builder route. A run route, how will adding that second daily trip affect ridership?
Sure. So the second daily round trip essentially doubles the schedule options, making the rail corridor much more viable for regional trips. For example, you know, it would enable a one overnight business or personal trip to the Twin Cities, Milwaukee or Chicago from many mid-sized and rural communities in Wisconsin and Minnesota, which is currently not possible with the current round trip. And frequency, or the number of daily round trips, is really the number one driver in ridership that we see across the country. So there is significant ridership growth forecasted in Wisconsin and Minnesota as a result of adding this second round trip.
Arun, you mentioned those rural communities. Can you talk more about how this line kind of brings them in and gives them more access to cities?
Sure. So this line, this project is actually more about, is more than just about the rail service, rail corridor itself. It also is about improving our overall inner city transportation network, getting more out of the existing resources. And so the additional rail schedule makes connections with other scheduled services like inner city bus or other modes much more feasible. I would also add, in terms of the impacts on these smaller urban and rural station communities, sort of piggybacking on the previous discussion, the economic impacts and business impacts of that are very important and very pronounced in those communities. It we've heard from the communities that the current rail service and the improved rail service is really going to enhance their ability to attract and retain jobs and businesses through improved connectivity to and direct connectivity to the economic epicenters of the region, such as Chicago, Milwaukee, and the Twin Cities. Especially important for communities like Portage, Tomah, and Columbus. In speaking with their, with local economic development directors, they're already using the Amtrak service as leverage when speaking to companies considering locating there. And then the second is there's obviously direct economic impacts, impact benefits from the project itself, with the jobs and increased sales and visitor spending, but then also in the smaller communities, there's significant benefit to local businesses from Amtrak customers coming into those communities for the station, and going to those local businesses, and so the stations in some cases in those smaller communities are a significant draw into the communities downtowns.
For now, towns like Eau Claire and Hudson aren't stops on that Empire Builder or Amtrak line, but there is potential for passengers to link up to the line via shuttle to Tomah. Scott Rogers, besides the Eau Claire-St. Paul train, what are other ways that the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition is working to improve transportation in general in Western Wisconsin?
Well, our mission, and we've been around actually for quite a few years now, and our mission has always been to use passenger rail service as an economic driver for a region. We think it's really important to be competitive, to have these links to the national system. And so the project, we've been working, of course, as Mark talked about before, to first of all, get a initial service going between Eau Claire, Menominee, Baldwin, Hudson, and the St. Paul, Minneapolis area four times a day with a public-private partnership, and tying into the TCMC project, which is the second train that Arun just talked about. They have included in the vision for that project establishing a shuttle between the Chippewa Valley and Tomah. We already see that a lot of people, and myself included within the last couple of weeks, have drive to Tomah to pick up the train there and go on to Milwaukee or Chicago, and that we would make that available even to more people, students, those who can't drive, or those who choose not to have to leave their car there, by establishing a shuttle between Eau Claire and the Tomah station, so that you could buy a ticket that would, you could get on in Eau Claire, take the shuttle to Tomah, and then go on to Milwaukee or Chicago or one of the other communities served by that service. And other states like California have been very successful. A very high percentage of their ridership comes from people who use a shuttle or bus connection at one end of their trip. And Wisconsin has already done that between Milwaukee and Green Bay. They also have established just recently some direct services so that those communities can tie in. So we've been working to really pursue every avenue to get that going.
Mark Quam, you're the president of the Chippewa Valley Transit Alliance, which is a group whose mission statement says that viable and eco-friendly public transportation networks and systems are a fundamental right. So what can you add to this conversation about opening all avenues for transportation?
Well, I think it's really important, as people travel, we really want transportation options, and especially people need choices, whether do I get in a car or do I take the train or take public transportation? And I think given the fact, that we all know that climate change is here, it's a reality. I think if you give people more options, that's really going to reduce our carbon footprint to some extent. I think our main purpose with the Chippewa Valley Transit Alliance here in Eau Claire is to really emphasize the need for alternative forms of transportation, and really passenger rail fits right into that. I mean, when you look at what it costs to drive your car, the insurance and the environmental impacts from driving, obviously we're not going to get everybody out of their car, and that isn't really the goal here, but it's just really about giving people transportation options. And I think fundamentally, we support and we fund a lot of different types of things. For instance, you buy an airplane ticket. I mean, when you're buying the or paying for the cost of an airline ticket, that some of that cost is coming through subsidies. And I think, you know, the same thing with highways. And often I hear the argument, well, you know, trains should pay for themselves. Well, they, you know, that may not always be the case in some situations, but I think from a broader perspective, I think we need to make it equitable to everybody. I think we really have to have a good, hard conversation how we fund public transportation, because I think all forms of public transportation are important and they're all worth funding. Obviously, highways do get a bigger percentage. I'm not anti-highway by any means, but I think it's really about giving people options, and that's really the driving cause for our advocacy group, is to improve, you know, better public transportation choices, not just here in the Chippewa Valley, but regionally and for the state here as well.
Well, let's talk more about funding. The $53 million inner city rail project connecting Chicago to the Twin Cities will largely be paid for with a mix of Federal Railroad Administration grants, but it will also require state matches of $6.2 million from Wisconsin and $10 million from Minnesota. Arun Rao, have state lawmakers indicated they'll vote to provide funding for this project?
Sure, yeah. So the 6.2 million match from Wisconsin, there are some options for funding that that we're looking at now. On the Minnesota side, Minnesota's also looking at how to fund that 10 million. So those are in progress. And Amtrak has also committed a $5 million contribution match. So there's a lot of participation in this project. I would also add that we have received a $12 million grant another $12 million grant from the Federal Railroad Administration to help cover the first 3 years of operating support of the service, which is very important as it reduces the burden on the states for providing operating funding for the startup period.
The existing proposal for the Eau Claire-St. Paul Railway would be funded through a public-private partnership. Scott Rogers, can you describe this model in depth?
Well, I'd need a long time to describe it in depth, but I can give you a general view of what we're looking at. One of the things that our coalition has done over the last few years is just looked at the different models of how things are done around the country and what can we do to innovate. And I think in the Chippewa Valley, we particularly have a track record of collaboration, and things like the Confluence project that we did in downtown Eau Claire was an example of some innovation where you approach things in a different way. And so we have seen that there actually are some private, public-private or private entities around the country, such as Brightline in Florida, which is in the midst of constructing a privately operated service between Orlando and Miami. There's some other models around the country as well. And we've also looked at things like Bloomington Normal, Illinois, which is a mid-sized city with a state university with four or five trains a day in each direction. And they developed their station area and generated another $200 million in private development around their station area and have a significant increase in ridership. So we've tried to look at things like how can a sufficient frequency using existing tracks, auto-competitive, taking advantage of the development around the station sites, and then looking at some of the federal funding programs, which aren't exclusive to Amtrak, but are available and out there for things like initial operating support and capital improvements. And we really tried to put all of that together in a public-private partnership. We are in the final stages of vetting a company from Chicago called Corridor Rail Development, that has indicated that they want to be the private partner. They have financing and investment capital that they are finalizing to move forward with the private side of it. They, in fact, by the end of this month, have told us that they are ready to sign a contract with a consulting firm to do something the private railroad who owns the tracks has requested to have done in order to host the service, and that is to do a complete analysis of the track structure, the operating characteristics, the modeling that would be required to actually have what the vision is four trains a day in each direction, to make it competitive enough with driving and to make it convenient enough to be reasonable for people to use. And so one other thing that we've done in that area to make sure the public side of it is represented is we have just formed the Chippewa St. Croix Rail Commission, and that's made up of the three counties that are on the line. So that would be St. Croix, Dunn, and Eau Claire counties, as well as some of the municipalities that are either nearby or right on the line, including Altoona, Eau Claire, Menominee, Baldwin, Hudson, and New Richmond. And they have gotten together and said, you know, we're going to look at the benefits of this, do what we can to work with our state departments of transportation in both states, with counties on the other side, and move forward with planning, look at what we need to do in our community. So those wheels are all turning right now, and we're cautiously optimistic that we have the pieces in place that we're going to be able to move forward and get this service implemented in the near future.
Scott, you mentioned the existing railway that you might use. What does the existing infrastructure look like between Eau Claire and St. Paul?
And earlier on, you asked Mark to kind of explain the different kinds of services. And so true high speed tends to be one where if you're going to be operating at 200 miles an hour, for instance, you really need to have a separate passenger line and a high ridership between major cities, but that can also benefit smaller communities along the line. But this would be what we call conventional rail service. It's owned by the Union Pacific, which is the successor organization. They're a Fortune 100 company, very strong organization. They use it for freight service now, and they have made a number of important improvements to the track structure and the signaling to be able to potentially host passenger rail service. So it would actually use, they would be paid as the host of the service using their assets to run on the line. And they've agreed that they will be open to having the passenger service there if they receive a reasonable compensation for using their tracks, and that they get this information from the study that's going to be underway to understand how their freights would interact with future passenger service, and if there are any improvements that are needed to make it possible.
That's the voice of Scott Rogers, who's the chair of West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition. We're talking about passenger rail in our corner of the state on the west side. You can call 800-228-5615 or email ideas@wpr.org. Now, Scott was just mentioning how you have to work with companies to use tracks. And Arun, I was wondering, what is the process that it takes to get a train across the state? Like, what kind of hoops do you have to jump through to gain right of way?
Sure. Yeah, there is a process that we have to go through, both with the host railroads, which in this case are the freight railroads, and Amtrak to gain access, and to make sure that when we add the passenger trains, we are not unduly impairing freight traffic, and we're mitigating any freight delays that might occur as a result of those trains. And we're also allowing for freight growth. So it does involve a process of simulation modeling of the railroad, of the track capacity, with simulating the freight and passenger traffic, and then seeing where there are bottlenecks or problem areas that might cause delay with that additional traffic, and then proposing infrastructure improvements in those areas to address those, and then testing those to see if they will address those issues. And so for the TCMC project, we went through that same process, and several projects were identified as being needed to allow for to accommodate those passenger trains and allow for everybody to be running on time. And so we identified four projects in Minnesota and a project in Wisconsin to do that, and came to an agreement with the railroad. In that case, it was Canadian Pacific Rail, on those infrastructure projects needed to do that. And so in this case, as Scott mentioned, between Eau Claire and St. Paul, the host railroad is Union Pacific, and a similar kind of railroad capacity simulation would need to be done to get agreement with the railroad on the infrastructure needs that to add those trains.
We're speaking with Arun Rao with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, Scott Rogers of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition, and Mark Quam, president of the Chippewa Valley Transit Alliance. And we'd like to hear from you. How do you see the development of rail connection affecting West Central Wisconsin communities, particularly ones that might have stations, like Hudson, Baldwin, Menominee, or Eau Claire? Call in at 800-228-5615 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Clara Neipert, and we're talking about passenger rail today. This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Now I'd like to return to our program today where we're talking about passenger rail in our corner of the state. I'd like to take a caller. Welcome Jill from St. Clair County.
Hi. Thank you. My question is, have any routes been determined in a preliminary sense, especially through St. Croix County, whether or not this would be along existing railroad tracks, and where do you propose that this rail would go across the St. Croix River?
Thank you, Jill. Arun Rao, I'll let you answer that question. Where do you see the future of rail in Wisconsin?
So for this, the corridor that, and I'll turn it over to Scott to expand on it, but that would, it would be using the existing Union Pacific tracks there in West Central Wisconsin. Scott, do you want to expand in that, on that?
Yeah. And certainly that's one of the advantages of moving forward this and keeping the costs low is that the tracks already exist. The right of way is already there. So it wouldn't really take any additional space or land or anything like that. We would be working, and they're actually part of the process, working with the communities along the line as far as things, and the counties, as far as any impacts that that has, and particularly in terms of station siting. So Hudson or Baldwin or moving into other counties, Menominee and Eau Claire would have a major role. In fact, probably the primary decision making locally for where stations would go and other improvements. One of the things that the study that's underway will also look at is what are the safety aspects. So making sure that there's proper protection for higher speed trains at crossings and things like this. It's worth pointing out that passenger rail is one of the lowest impact services you can have. It's not like putting a highway in, particularly when you're using existing lines. It's very safe, and it really doesn't create any more use of space.
Let's talk for a moment about ticketing. So as proposed, a train ticket from Eau Claire to St. Paul would cost $32, and then the prices would decrease as you get closer to St. Paul. Scott Rogers, would you have to sell a certain amount of tickets to support this project?
Well, part of what we're looking at, of course, is that we are hoping to have a private partner who is going to take on the marketing of this and be there to maximize revenues. So the revenues would come from a number of sources. It would be tickets. It also potentially would be some of what we call a value capture of gaining revenue from the station sites and that sort of thing and the value that's created there. And they would use current best practices to look at what is the travel market, what do we need to do in terms of pricing at different times of the day or different times of the year, depending on demand. And they would do things like have multi-ride tickets, likely possibly student and family discounts, but perhaps even a additional class of service where they would charge a little bit more for premium service. And a lot of routes have something called business class or even first class. So that organization that would take that on would look at the pricing and the ticketing, and certainly they would do, their mission would be to maximize ridership and maximize revenues, just like Amtrak does in other places and the airlines do, or any transportation provider would do. So there certainly would be a certain number that you'd need to cover your costs, and that would be built into the planning for this. And one of the federal programs that exists right now, and we think will probably continue, as decisions are made about the future is something called a restoration and enhancement grants. That's one of the ones that Wisconsin has received for the second train, and that is it's a declining scale to help you get over those first 2 or 3 years where you got to build up the ridership and the revenue, and there'd be some grants available to help make that happen as well.
Yeah, let's talk more about the future. Mark Quam, you're a member of several groups that advocate for passenger rail. How do you feel that coalitions like these are driving the effort to bring rail to Western Wisconsin?
Well, I think it's really important, you know, to understand that with funding, especially from the federal level, that, you know, it really is a game changer when we have dedicated funding sources or funding from the federal government, because obviously states can't do it alone. I think what's really important is that we try to, you know, have a dedicated funding source for passenger rail. And I know, you know, with the current Biden administration with $80 billion projected, budgeted for Amtrak, and that would be for future improvements. I think that is really critical, not just for funding that, but also for creating jobs and doing things at the local level. But I think what we have long not had in this country is we do not have what I call a dedicated funding source for passenger rail. Highways get dedicated funding and comes out of the federal transportation funding pot. But I think if we're going to really successfully expand our passenger rail services in the future, we really have to have a dedicated funding source. And I know there's different opinions on how we would fund that, but I think it's just like anything else. If it's a service that is needed and people put a value on that, you know, I think it's important that we fund that. And from an advocacy standpoint, I'm involved with the National Association of Rail Passengers, or what we call Rail Passengers Association. And I think what is really vital is having different organizations, local organizations. It's all part of a network that I think, you know, we work to improve better funding. And I think one thing that's important to understand too is with federal funding, you know, especially Amtrak does create jobs here in Wisconsin for goods and services and so forth. So I think, you know, there's so many different elements that play into funding that, you know, we really collaboratively, I think, local grassroots efforts and, you know, local groups all play a role, because without that, sometimes decisions get made at the federal level, and if they don't really have a good understanding what's going on regionally or locally, I think that makes a difference. So it's definitely important to have federal funding and other sources of revenue to fund our various potential projects here.
Yeah, more about that federal funding. You mentioned there's that $80 billion increase in mass transit funding. And now we have President Joe Biden, who's been so vocal about his support for rail that he's been called Amtrak Joe Biden. So, Mark, I'm wondering, how are we going to see Biden have impact on rail travel?
Well, obviously, you know, President Biden has been a strong supporter of passenger rail. I mean, and obviously, you know, what, you know, the Biden administration proposes is great. Obviously, it's still going to have to get congressional approval, and hopefully, you know, we may not get the full funding, but obviously, I think having a president that supports all forms of public transportation, and especially with rail, I think that, you know, definitely, you know, plays a bigger factor into how, you know, decisions get made, you know, not just at the federal level, but at state and local levels as well. So my hope would be that, you know, we make sure that, you know, we get funding to support that. And the one thing that I think is important, especially for our Wisconsin U.S. Congress representatives like Ron Kind's district and any districts in Wisconsin that are served by Amtrak, it's important that our congressional representatives, you know, back that or support that, just from the standpoint that, you know, people need transportation choices. So I think it's good that people have those awareness of, you know, what we need to move things along.
I want to talk now about what a potential rail passenger can see in the future. Scott Rogers, what do you see happening with the Eau Claire and St. Paul Railway in, let's say, the next 2 years?
Well, we have several parallel efforts going on that should lead us towards implementing the service. So one is, I mentioned that this track structure and capacity modeling structure study is underway. Right now, the expectation is that that will start around the 1st of June. It is going to take 4 months, so we will get the results of that sometime in the fall. So that'll be an important piece of information as we move forward. The Chippewa St. Croix Rail Commission is starting to meet to look at really all of the aspects of setting the table and planning for the service when it's implemented, thinking about what the local ramifications are, even things like how are we going to tie in local transportation to that, station sites, et cetera. Our private partner who's working on it, Corridor Rail Development, told us in our board meeting earlier this week, in fact, that they also are about to start on building the prototype train for that. That would be using some high quality refurbished stainless steel equipment, locomotives. Their goal is to have that train done and be ready for demonstrations in about a year or less. And so sometime next year, we would be able to see what the equipment would look like. And then, so there'd be a lot of other planning going on at the same time. And then really kind of going back to some of the things Mark talked about, there are some policy decisions that are going to be made, need to be made broadly. Particularly from Washington, traditionally, transportation support has come from the federal government. And I think as Mark sort of mentioned, sometimes there's an impression that railroads are subsidized, but other modes aren't. And really that shifted a lot in previous years, in recent years. So for instance, highway investments, gas taxes only pay about half of that. The rest comes from general funds. And we are having some decisions being made in Washington in the coming months. And it does appear that there will be some movement in that area. Passenger rail funding has actually been bipartisan in the past. The federal programs that are going towards the TCMC project that Arun talked about were passed under, those funding levels are passed under a Republican Congress and administration. But now we have some proposals such as the $80 billion to create passenger rail development. We've got to reauthorize our surface transportation this year. And then there would be the fiscal year 2022 federal appropriations that need to happen this year. And those sources may be important for some of the implementation of the service going forward. So if the stars all align, we hear various discussions of how soon it could happen. A really aggressive schedule would be 2 years. I tend to be more cautious and say it might be 3 to 4 or 5 years. The TCMC project that Arun talked about, they are planning to have that operational by 2024, if I'm attributing that correctly. So those are some things to watch going in the future. So you're not can't be ready to buy a ticket yet, but the day is getting closer.
Thank you so much. Well, that looks like all the time that we have for today. Thank you so much for joining us, Arun Rao. Arun is the Passenger Rail Implementation Manager at the Wisconsin Department of Transportation. And thank you, Mark Quam. Mark is the President of the Chippewa Valley Transit Alliance, Secretary and Acting Treasurer of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition, and also a representative for Wisconsin in the Rail Passengers Association. And finally, thank you, Scott Rogers. Scott is the chair of the West Central Wisconsin Rail Coalition and the vice president of governmental affairs for the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce. Rick Ryer helped produce today's program, and Kate Springer is our on-air producer. She also manages publicity. Looking ahead next week, we are going to talk about housing in our corner of the state. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Claire Neibert. This is The West Side.